Saturday Night Theatre.
We present Buried Alive, Arnold Bennett's 1912 novel, dramatized by James Duckett, with David King as Priam Farl and Jane Hilton as Alice Challis. Buried Alive. The year by the Christian calendar is 1912. The season, summer, the time, night, and the address, 91 Selwood Terrace, South Kensington, London. A house like 10,000 others, its conscience heavy with the death of sundry servants. Though of late generally empty, it has never once been untenanted. 11 of its 12 rooms are dark and forlorn. Into the other enters Priam Farl, its owner.
Oh, Lord.
Priam Farl. To call the world's attention visually to his existence would be anguish to him. But I shall conceal nothing. He is 50, and his eyes are sad, very sad. Yet, like most men of 50, he is still quite young, and like most bachelors of 50, rather helpless. He has just returned from making a most embarrassing call.
The doctor says he will come right round.
Thank you, sir. I wish I could, sir.
Wish you could what, Leek?
Come right round, sir.
Oh, yes. Yes, well, I'm sure you'll soon be as right as rain, old chap.
Did you say what it was I had, sir?
How could I, you fool? Well, I don't know what you have.
I don't know how you did it.
Do what? I didn't do anything.
I mean, how did you get him to come so quick, like, sir?
Oh, that. Well. Well, when he said that he was sorry, but also very busy, I simply, rather importantly, I think, I said that there was a fellow creature suffering at number 91. 91, he said, but 91's been shut for years. It's Priam Farl's place. That's quite, I said. I'll be along in an instant. So you see what your confounded illness has done, don't you, Leek? Discovered us.
Sorry, sir.
Oh, never mind, old chap, never mind. As soon as you're fit and well, we'll disappear again. Now, come along now. Into bed with you.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but it's not ready. I only had time to get yours made, and then I...
Then get into mine.
What, sir? Oh, no. What, me? In your bed?
Look, Leek, you're not a servant now. You're a sick man, a fellow creature.
No, sir.
Bed.
A chill from the boat. I'm right enough.
My bed or the sack? Have a choice.
Oh, the bell, sir. Excuse me.
Oh, no, you don't. You stay there.
Priam Farl had known that the bell had meant an urgent summons, and yet he had hesitated, because although a great as well as famous artist, he had always been, and as yet still is, shy. Shy at the prospect of meeting strangers, shy of walking across a room full of seated people, shy of speaking his name, and shy now of opening his own front door. Death himself seems to want entrance. Suppose that Leek is seriously ill.
This, Mr. Farl.
Come in, Doctor.
How is he?
The same, I think. But quiet.
Good.
Very.
Good. Sorry I couldn't come before. GP's day. On my feet since six, and I am, sorry to say, not what I used to be.
Oh, it's very good of you to come. It's just in here.
Ah, good. Good.
Dr. Cashmore and Priam Farl approached the man sprawling uncomfortably in one of the room's two comfortable chairs. Henry Leek. For the past 25 years, the sole means of living communication between his master and the world.
It's all up with me. I know it. Tell me, Doctor, It is, isn't it?
Oh, not if I can help it, sir. Not yet.
Oh, it is. I know. I can feel it. It is.
He should be in bed.
I'm done forever. Bed?
Where is his room?
Nowhere, sir. It's still not made.
It is. You know.
Oh, I don't.
Now, keep your mouth open. Under the tongue. Good. Good. Now, give me your hand. Good. That's good. When did this start?
About 6 o'clock when he was... Before.
I see. Yes.
On the boat, I suppose. From Boulogne.
I see. Mm. Good. Now, would you kindly open up for me now, sir? Good. Good.
What's it say?
Not much. Now, where's your room?
It's in there.
It's not.
Then come along.
Oh, no, no.
Just put your arm. That's right. No, so.
Oh, good. I'll be right enough.
Now left and right. That's right, sir. Good.
Is there anything that I may do, Doctor?
No, no, it's quite all right. A few more tests and all will be well.
And as the doctor supports the ailing man to his master's room, Priam Pahl is left alone. And for the first time for many years, he feels alone. In the days when the new gallery was new, a picture signed by the unknown name of Priam Pahl was exhibited there.
And this is it, Mater. Just look at it.
I am looking at it, dear.
The light on his buttons and on his whiskers. And the eyes, so defiant.
Yes, they are quite defiant.
I wonder if any criminals have seen it yet.
They have. I'm sure they ran away in fright.
Unconquered and unconquerable. It's like an icon. The perfect image of the English policeman. The first in art, I shouldn't wonder. Such courage.
Courage?
Yes.
Defiance, yes, but courage?
No, the artist.
Oh, this Priam Pahl.
A genius.
But will he sell? After all, it's quite a sum. £1,000 for a bobby, dear. One can buy a rare postage stamp for that.
Yes, but...
Yes, but... Who is he?
They do say it's the policeman who...
No, no, the man.
The artist? Pahl.
Yes, Priam Pahl. But who is he, this Priam Pahl?
I've told you.
Yes, nobody knows.
It's true.
Then who will buy him, dear?
England had spoken. Nobody knew, so nobody bought. But a year later in Paris at Les Galeries des Arts Nouveaux, America spoke in the person of Whitney C. Witt, famous connoisseur and known owner of at least two Raphaels.
And this?
Pingouin, by Priam Pahl, Monsieur Witt.
Pingouin, huh? Pingouin, it's called. And penguins they are, by God. God, goddamn penguins. Yeah, the light's good, too. And the rocks, and... yeah, that light on their beaks. What else has he done?
But little, monsieur.
But what, Maurice?
He is, monsieur, as yet, I regret, as caviar to the general.
Which general?
Oh, monsieur Witt. No, last year in London, he showed a work, a pot that no one dared to buy.
I'd like to see it.
Monsieur, £1,000, so no one dared.
And this?
Some cease.
£6,000?
Oh, dollars, monsieur.
Then call it sold.
Sold, monsieur.
For 5.5?
For 5.5.
Now, tell me more about this man.
He lives, monsieur, the life of a recluse.
Then let me see this London piece.
America had spoken, and America bought. Not only penguins, but PCX. Not only that, but every year a painting from the unknown Pahl. Even his bank knew little more than his address in Italy from whence he'd come to London, summer 1912. What brought him then to Kensington? Well, maybe once, or more than once, he'd met Sophia Entwistle, a lady, Lady Entwistle of Florence. So to get away... But no, He now is quite alone. It is 6 o'clock, and he is still awake. The morning is bright, but the curtains closed.
I think I heard, Doctor.
I'm sorry, but...
There'll be an inquest?
No. Well, I was there.
Oh, it's good.
Pneumonia. It happens like that. Now, where are Mr. Fowles' relatives?
Relatives?
Who's Mr. Fowles? They must be informed.
Oh, yes, naturally. I don't think... Well, except perhaps a second cousin, a solicitor, yes. A Duncan Fowles.
His address?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Oh, well, he'll be in the directory, no doubt. Now, I just have to make out this certificate. Yes. Now, what was your master's name in full?
Priam, Doctor. Just Priam, Fowl.
The lie was out, and its speaker shuddered. His knees went weak, his palms moist, and all the objects of that forsaken room began to swirl around him. But a few seconds later, from somewhere deep within him, he heard a stranger and bolder spirit speak. For good or ill, it simply said, "You're dead. You're free. Rechristened Henry Leek." And 8 hours later, asleep in his favorite dressing gown, those words are still recurring in his dreams.
Ah.
Yes?
You must be Leek. I am Duncan Fowles, solicitor, cousin of the late deceased. Your employer, I believe.
Oh, yes. You come in.
What arrangements have you made?
None yet. I've been asleep.
Hence the dressing gown, I suppose.
Yes.
Good heavens. Some men to him, I must say.
Mr. Fowl never had any complaints, sir. Never.
Look here.
Solicitor. Well.
Yes, and one with work to do. Look, you and I had better come to an understanding at once. What for your wages?
100 a year?
What?
Well, it's in my contract of employment, sir, if you wish to see it.
Well, when were you last paid?
The day before yesterday.
Then here's £8.07, a month's wages in lieu of notice. Get your things together now and go.
Yes, sir.
But let me see your box before you do.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and by the way, you'd better have this.
What is it?
A letter, wouldn't you think? The postboy gave it to me as I was ringing the bell to wake you from your rest.
I see, sir. You mean you took it from him. But since it was addressed to me and not to Mr. Fowle, and since that you, as a solicitor, understand the consequences of accepting a stranger's mail, but thank you, nevertheless.
Pack up and be out of this house within the hour.
And an hour later, Priam Fowle finds himself on the pavement, Leek's box by his side, and Leek's clothes uncomfortably about his person. He deflects for a moment on the results of prevarication, and then applies his mind to examining his resources, the contents of H. Leek's pocketbook. Money first. 2 £10 banknotes, 5 French notes for 1,000 francs each, a number of Italian notes of smaller denominations. In all, the equivalent of £230. Does he wonder how Leek had come by so much? No, not for long. He'd always guessed that Leek was a scoundrel.
Cab? Yes, sir? The Grand Babylon Hotel.
Yes, sir.
In the Strand.
Yes, sir.
Sitting at his desk in his Babylonian suite, Priam Fowle, or Henry Leek, as the register has it, re-examines his pocketbook. A folding inch rule, 2 itineraries of journeys past, a few postage stamps, and a photograph of a woman of 40 or so. And then 2 letters. The first scribbled, and obviously a first draft.
My dear Mrs. Chalice, your letter inspires me with more confidence than any of the dozens I have received. As for myself, I have been for many years private secretary and companion to the celebrated artist Priam Fowle.
And personally am anxious for the change. I feel the need of a home and the companionship of just such a woman as yourself. We shall be in London on the 20th of August at the address above. So suppose we meet on the evening of the 22nd.
Till then, in great haste, yours sincerely, Henry Leake.
And the second, the one which Duncan Fowle had given Priam on his expulsion from Selwood Terrace.
Dear Mr. Leake, I'm so glad to have your letter. I shall be most glad to meet you as you suggest. Suppose we go to St. George's Hall.
I'll be there outside at the end of the afternoon. You'll recognize me by my photograph.
But I shall wear red roses in my hat. So, au revoir for the present. Yours sincerely, Alice Chalice.
Oh, infamous Leake.
Not, you notice, alas, poor Leake. For Leake's greatest speciality had always been the speciality of looking after Leake. But now Priam Fowle must look after himself. Why, then, did he find himself outside St. George's Hall on the afternoon of the 22nd?
Are you Mr. Leake? I suppose you are.
Are you Mrs. Chalice?
Yes.
The flowers?
Yes.
Roses?
Yes.
Good afternoon.
I didn't really expect you would come.
You didn't? Why not?
Why? Well, Mr. Fowle being dead...
Oh, yes.
...you with so much to do.
But how did you know?
How did I know? Listen. And look, that poster there.
Oh, I see.
It's all about. Didn't you notice?
No, I didn't.
That shows how much it's on your mind. Was he a good master?
Yes. Yes, very good.
You're not in mourning.
No, he didn't wish it.
I wouldn't myself. They say it shows respect, but it seems to me that if you can't show respect without, well, a pair of black gloves at the dye's coming off, and I've buried a husband, I don't know what you think.
Oh, I agree.
I suppose you'll have to be going back soon to arrange things like...
Oh, no, it's all done. Besides, they've dismissed me.
Who have?
With the relatives.
But why? You made them pay your month, I hope.
Oh, yes, indeed. It was in his will.
Well, we can't stand here forever. There's no need to be shy with me, you know. I'm just as you see me.
Do I seem shy?
All right, then. I take it as a poor compliment being shy with me. Where do you think we could have a good talk? I don't know about you, but I'm free the whole evening.
And neither the first nor the last time her eyes question his. At a later hour, they are seated within the most glittering restaurant of London. Glittering largely on account of its walls of beveled glass, so that the curious observer may observe himself and countless fractions of himself.
I've always wanted to come here. It's very handsome, isn't it?
Two lagers, sir?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you.
Isn't it amusing? All these people.
All this noise.
Oh, don't say that. I'm glad.
Oh, that's good.
You know, for years I've been thinking of getting married again. And if you really are thinking of getting married, what are you to do? You may sit in a chair till eggs are sixpence a dozen. You'll get lonelier. No, you must do something. And what is there but a matrimonial agency? If you want to get married, you want to get married, and it's no use pretending you don't. No shame in wanting to get married, is there? Now, if you ask me, matrimonial agencies are the most sensible things that have ever been invented. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure that if anything comes of this, I'd pay the fee twice over or more. But fancy me in
But look here, Mr. Charlie, you can't possibly afford to pay for all this.
I can't. The paper can, though.
But I'm supposed to be on a diet. I've lost nearly a stone in 6 months.
May I put that in?
Just you dare. You've quite enough about me already. You know what I think? I believe that working on that paper...
has robbed me of my soul?
Well, yes, I do.
Yet if you only knew the yearnings of my heart...
You sound as if you've been reading that Omar Khayyam everyone's raving about. What have you been doing today?
I've been being busy with the Prime Parlifair, the painter.
Oh, yes, him. He's dead, it seems.
You bet. Frightfully rich, you know, and yet died in a practical hovel. And his valet's disappeared.
Oh, Charlie, you don't mean murder.
Oh, no, but there's a story somewhere, I think. This afternoon I went to see his cousin, Duncan Farr, money-lending lawyer. But he seemed to know as little as we do.
Really? Oh, I do hope there's something terrible.
Why?
Well, so that I can go to the inquest, or the police court, or whatever.
There won't be any inquest. There is something odd in it. You see, Pranfall was hardly ever in England. Always abroad. At those foreign hotels wandering up and down.
You know what I've been waiting for, don't you? You haven't told me yet whether you've ever been married.
No. No.
And you've always lived alone like that. No home. Travelling about. No one to look after you properly, like.
One gets accustomed to it. No responsibilities.
But now?
Now is different.
You know, I do feel sorry for you all those years.
Thank you.
Thank you? For what? I just do.
Louis! Father Louis!
Grandson!
Father, do come and sit here and be nice. This is Father Luke Peterson, Mr. Dockery of the Record.
Delighted. Delighted. Waiter, bring me half a bottle of high seat.
High seat?
Yes,
sir. High seat? Well, I like that. We're a diocese.
I don't like high seat. I'm dieting. Doctor's orders every night before retiring. It appears that my sister's in good crisis. Maria, Lady Roundel, insists on giving me £100 a year to pay for it. Her own beautiful way of helping the good cause. I've just been seeing her tonight. She's so cut up about the death of Pram Fowl, poor thing. So artistic, you know.
Did you ever meet Pram Fowl, Father Vic?
Never. I understand he was most eccentric, and I hate eccentricity. However, Maria Lady Roundel insists he be buried in Westminster Abbey.
Westminster Abbey? Gracious. I had no idea he was as big as
all. I have the greatest possible confidence in Maria Lady Roundel's taste, of course, so it may be that I shall be able to do something about it. I'll call the dean.
Pardon me, Father, but I understood that since you left the church,
since I joined the church, you mean? There is but one.
Since you left the Church of England, there has been a breach between the dean and yourself.
Barely religious. Besides, my sister is the dean's favorite niece, and I am her favorite brother. So, since it is the dean that ultimately settles these questions of national funerals, I do believe...
Oh, what a bore.
I'm sure the Record will support you, Father. Please, gentlemen, as regards a burial in Westminster Abbey.
Gentlemen, please.
At least I think I'm sure.
Maria Lady Roundel will be grateful.
That's it, then. No. I'll see you home. That's kindness speaking. We live miles apart. I'll think about it and write.
I'll write, too.
Best not to rush things.
No, no, quite. Please, good. Good.
And the morning after, Priam Farr realizes with the shock of sudden sunlight that for good or ill, his whole life has been permanently changed.
Death of England's greatest painter. Sudden death of Priam Farr. Sad death of genius. Great loss. The world's art. Europe in mourning.
Europe in mourning? Oh!
Yes. Like Titian
Oh, no.
It has been said, however, that his choice of such subjects as policemen and penguins demonstrated a capriciousness more typical of the poseur than the true artist.
Poseur? Not true. This man's an ass.
Time alone will settle the true position of Priam Farm.
You, sir, and critics, and time be damned.
The following day, however, the papers are neither mourning the death of Priam Farr nor evaluating his work. They are debating the proper place of his funeral.
Port, sir? Port, sir?
Yes. No, George. Forgive me, but I must say that I agree with the Times. Buried in Westminster Abbey is an honor to be granted only to those who have done for England.
Admittedly, Gerald, but...
He was neither moral, like Hogarth or Sir Noel Paton, nor a worshipper of beauty and legend, like Leighton.
Agreed.
No, he worked simply for himself. And indeed, who will truly say that his daubs are any good? Only a few eccentrics like himself.
Whitney C. Witt.
Whitney C. Witt. An eccentric. True?
True, yes.
Since when, then, has it been the custom to bury an eccentric in Westminster Abbey on the recommendation of another?
But with all respect, Gerald, it appears that not only the eccentrics are on Witt's side. The record, for instance...
The record?
Haven't you seen it?
No, I never do.
Oh, but I think you should from time to time. Today, for instance, it has a scoop. Admittedly, it's pro foul, but it also published his will. After providing for his valet, he's bequeathed the rest of his fortune to the nation for the building and upkeep of a gallery of great masters. Here it is. Its nucleus will consist of his own collection. Several Rembrandts, Velasquez, 6 Vermeers, a Giorgione, 2 Chromes, and a Holbein. So, it seems he has done for England after all.
The coffin is covered with a purple pall, and on the pall... a simple, single cross of white, as befits perhaps the most self-effacing artist of modern times. It consists of daisies, lilies, and Elysium.
Oh, no.
Excuse me, sir.
No.
Do you know? Not from here.
But I'm Priam Farr.
He's all business. We're on the train.
I want to go. Just let me be.
Then come along.
I can help.
If you want to go, then we'll help you out.
Thank you, but no. I shall go by myself. Excuse me, madam.
Certainly.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Drunk.
Oh, no, gentlemen. Would I were. Observe how quietly and straight I go. Cabin? But they'll be in there an hour yet.
Where did you go?
The Grand Babylon. I'll keep you for it.
Come for gold.
And as the cab gathers speed, Priam Farr abandons himself to a fit of candid, unrestrained cursing, variously and shamelessly in English, French, and Italian. I do not dare to let you hear such words, but it would be dishonest of me not to record the fact of their utterance. However, by the time he reaches the hotel, the fit has passed. So much so that he gives the cabman half a crown, a preposterous amount.
Why? Oh, thank you, sir. God bless you.
But before he can enter the nest of his hotel, another cab pulls up, and out of it steps... Mrs. Alice Challice.
How much?
I'll settle that.
Oh, no, you mustn't.
Just a shilling, ma'am.
Here, I'll keep you.
Why? Thank you, sir.
God bless you.
And God bless you, sir. Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, I suppose you'll want to know why I followed you. The truth is, I went to the funeral. Only it seems if you want to go to a funeral in Westminster Abbey, you have to have a ticket. So me not having one, I decided to go home. But then the talk in the crowd outside was so amusing. All about Lord this and Lady that. I thought I'd linger a bit. And then you came out. So you are staying here after all.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but...
Won't you...
Getting your address. Oh. Oh, I do like their carpet.
Aubusson. Shall we sit here?
This chair.
Fauteuil, they call them.
My. No. The other day, I happened to be passing Selwood Terrace, so I thought I'd just pop in and give you a call, like. But this young man answered the door. Invited me in. He said he was Duncan Fowles' clerk. Told me your address and all sorts of strange, peculiar things.
Such as?
Well, to start, when Duncan Fowle discovered the will, he got into such a state that he smashed the vows. But then, when he heard the funeral was going to be at the Abbey, it seemed to calm him down a bit. That's lawyers all over.
And by now, I suppose, it's all drawing to its close.
You left before, though?
Yes, I did.
Couldn't see him put down like that.
No, I couldn't.
I know how it feels. Oh, your collar's unbuttoned. Here.
No.
Let me do it.
No.
I see you need a woman's touch. There. Oh, you're lucky then.
I am.
Those moles on your neck. So close together. That means luck.
It does? Good. I'm glad.
When do you go on duty? Not soon, I hope. I mean, it seems to me you need a good rest or a nice cup of tea. Or...
Duty? What duty?
Oh, your duty here.
But I have no duties. I'm staying here.
You mean, as a guest?
Yes. Oh, I've managed to put quite a bit aside. Mr. Fowle was very kind. And it was just that this place seemed so... convenient.
Convenient?
Would you like something to eat? I rather feel like lunch now, I come to think of it. Don't you?
Do you mean here?
Yes. Why not? Will the grill room do?
Do they do kidneys?
I'm sure they do. What are they like?
Mm. They're good. Not much for the sauce. Or for restaurants, for that matter.
No? Oh, but I'm sorry. I thought the other night that...
Oh, yes. Don't get me wrong. I was very glad to go. But you see, I've never been to a restaurant.
Really?
Yes, really. I just thought I'd like to try one. Oh, it was very pleasant. I think they ought to be ashamed of the food they serve. That sole, for instance. It was no more sole than my shoes, sole. And the prices.
Oh, I thought that really they were rather cheap.
Well, I didn't. Why, a good housekeeper can keep things going for a week for such. Suppose this place is even dearer.
Oh, no, this is a better place altogether. In point of fact, I don't know many places in Europe where one can eat better.
Don't you?
Well, they say, for instance... that there is no butter used in this place that costs less than 3 shillings a pound.
No butter costs 3 shillings a pound?
Not in London, but they have it from Paris.
Really?
Yes, really. Still, hotels can still be very convenient.
Convenient? How?
Well, a telephone in every room.
You mean even in the bedrooms?
Oh, yes.
Well... you wouldn't catch me having a telephone in my bedroom. I should never sleep. It might be all very well for gentlemen not used to what I call comfort, but you... oh, I do talk too much.
I've never been in Putney. No. Tell me about it.
And as she informs about Putney and her life in Putney, there gradually arises in his brain a vision of a kind of existence... such as he had never encountered.
place on a hill, washed by the Thames. Picturesque barges and ornamental rowing boats. A handsome street of shops, too. And at night it perfectly glitters. A theatre, a music hall, assembly rooms, a concert hall, and tea shops just like Regent Street. Barnes Common if you walk one way, and Wimbledon if you walk another. And at the corner of Werter Road, where Mrs. Challis lives, a fish shop, where, except on Mondays, authentic sole is always available. Putney. You have your little house, and you do everything yourself. You read magazines when not more amusingly occupied, seldom traffic in such things as art, and you always feel rich, for the simple reason that you spend less than you happen to receive. Priam Fowle's vision approaches the utopia. Art? What of it? What did it lead to? What life had his great art given him?
You won't be staying here long, I don't suppose.
Oh, no. I shall decide something.
You'll take another place?
Another place?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
You must have quite a good bit by then. Perhaps you haven't. Saving's more a matter of chance. It depends how you begin. And men, well, there I go again. I talk so much, I suppose, because I hardly ever get the chance.
Werter Road, is it?
Yes. Number 29.
Perhaps you'll let me call on you sometime.
Oh, yes. Do.
Tomorrow?
Come to tea.
And so, a suitably paired couple at the corner of Werter Road buy a bit of soul and scarcely notice the placards outside the paper shop next door. Impressive scenes at Westminster Abbey. Fowle funeral, stately pageant, great painter laid to rest, etc., etc. And 3 weeks later, they are being married. But for Priam Fowle, it is as if he has died and is on his way to heaven. That divine place where you want nothing you've not already got. A late September morning, and Putney still bliss. With a real breakfast of eggs, toast and coffee before him, Priam Fowle feels as fresh as a boy.
Here's your telegraph.
I love you.
You better.
The telegraph. Propped up against the coffee pot, it seems to stand for both the solidity of England and his newfound state.
Oh, and Henry, would you look at this letter for me? It looks official, and you know how I hate such things. Who's it from?
Cahoon's Brewery Company Limited. As possibly you have noted in the financial columns of today's newspapers, the chairman of the company at yesterday's annual meeting at the Cannon Street Hotel declared...
Well?
That owing to the depreciation in licensed property, the directors had not felt justified in declaring any dividend on ordinary shares.
Oh, no.
Why? How much have you got in the company?
All I have. Except this house. Father left it me like that. He said there was nothing like a brewery. Well, it's brought me £150 every year, always the same on Christmas Day.
Well, my dear, doesn't look as if they'll bring you anything this time.
Oh, but Henry, how can they?
So beer had failed. Even beer. Truly the foundations of England's greatness were, if not gone already, going. In the old days, a brewery would stand any amount of mismanagement. And as for the British workman, not only does he form trade unions, but now he's taken to not drinking. Desolation spreads in 1,000 genteel homes. But at 29 Werter Road...
Well, whatever happens, I said I'd make some pastry today, and I will too. You see if I don't. I've no patience with worrying.
And although the better part of Henry Leake's £200 remains in his pocket... And although he realizes that he'll continue to receive £1 a week from his own will, Priam Fowle feels distinctly and strangely disturbed. And he makes a great and critical resolve. Not, you understand, the result of conscience, but instinct. Pure instinct.
Yes, sir?
I should like to purchase some oil paint.
Well, you'll be able to find enough of that here, sir. Just beginning, are you?
Well, not exactly.
Starting again, then. Oh, I was like that myself once. But now I can't think why I stopped. Now, we have this box here. I use it myself. 12 tubes and brushes, oils and palette included.
Thank you, but really, I think that I'd rather try to choose my own.
Oh.
Have you any rose madder?
Rose madder.
And ultramarine.
Ultramarine.
Burnt umber.
Burnt umber.
Cobalt blue. Poster red. Yellow ochre. Viridian. Tyrian. Vermilion, carmine, white lead, two of those, Prussian blue, cadmium, chrome, Van Dyke brown, and indigo, and sepia.
Sepia. Anything more, sir?
Yes, these three brushes, this palette, and some mixing oil.
You'll need it, I should think, with such a rain.
Yes.
And drying oil, or don't you use it?
Oh, yes, sometimes it's necessary.
It's the one Whistler used.
Thank you.
I can see you're starting the serious, sir.
Yes.
Is there anything else?
Let me see now.
A sketching box, for instance.
Yes, why not? A sketching box.
The best there is.
Thank you.
Well, now, I suppose I must reckon all this up. Now, 18 tubes.
Oh, and I want a canvas. 36 by 24.
And a few minutes later, two policemen see a man sneaking down to the gravelly shore a little above the steamer pier. But all he does is to take out a sketch box and begin to make a sketch of the scene before him. And so, after a while, they pass on. But it is like a guilty husband that he returns home, opening the door without a sound, creeping to the attic to leave his things, just in time for...
Ah, lunch.
Ham and...
You.
Sit down. You've had a good walk.
The river. What a life around the pier. The light on the bridge. Wonderful. And you?
I cooked.
You did the pastry.
And some cakes. And then I thought... Or tried to, about that letter.
Oh, that. I thought you didn't believe in worrying.
I don't. But all the same...
Now, what does it mean but a brewery's misspent? I've got money enough. And if we need more, I can always earn some.
Now, if you think I'm going to let you go into another situation, you're mistaken, that's all.
Well, I wasn't thinking of that.
Then what do you want?
The attic first.
The attic? What for?
To make a study.
A study?
Yes.
Oh, it's nothing but dust.
But I've worked it all out, and in 3 days' time, come up and see what I've done up there.
3 days later, which was for Alice an age, but for Priam Farr, an instant. Because having completed in oils his sketch of the bridge, he realizes that he could no more be a bad painter than a good valet. And the picture is dazzling.
Henry, what are you doing up there?
Come and see. I can paint. By Jove, I still can paint.
Oh, what a smell of paint. Oh.
Do you like it?
Did you do that?
Yes. How does it strike you? Oh, no, don't touch it. It's still wet. Stand about here.
What is it? Putney Bridge.
Yes.
I thought so.
Well, what do you think of it?
Well... I'm sure it's very beautiful for an amateur. I think it's a pity you haven't put an omnibus on the bridge.
There is one. There. That's one.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see it now. But if you could paint some words on it, Vanguard or Pear's Soap, then people would be sure. Not that I don't think it's very good, though. I suppose you picked up the tricks of the trade for when you were... Oh, look, there's the Elk Public House. What a lot you've managed to get in. I can recognize the old elk. Anyone would.
Good.
Where shall we put it?
Nowhere. I'm going to sell it, my dear. It may surprise you to know it, but that canvas is worth at least £800.
£500 for that.
Why not?
Well, down in the High Street, you can get real frame professional pictures for £3 apiece. Very good they are, too. Lakes and mountains,
Alice,
and woods and bluebells.
Look,
and
Alice, I want to talk to you.
Well?
Look, it's like this. You see, my real name is not Henry Leake.
It isn't? Well, what's in a name?
Quite a lot sometimes.
So long as you haven't committed murder or anything.
But my real name is Priam Fowle.
No. Priam Fowle was your gentleman's name.
No, it's mine. I mean, it wasn't me that died, but my valet. But when the doctor came, he thought that Leake was me, and I didn't tell him differently. I was afraid of all the bother and just let it slide. Well, and there were other reasons, too. You know how I am.
I'm not sure I do. Not now.
But can't you understand? Oh, this is agony. Look, it is so simple. I am Priam Fowle, and I had a valet, Henry Leake. He died, but they thought it was me. Only it wasn't.
And you never said a word?
Not a word.
Then if I were you, I'd still keep perfectly silent about it, and don't worry. You've just got yourself overexcited, that's all.
You don't believe me, do you?
What I believe is that you should try and forget it.
But I've got 1,500 for things not half as good as that.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure you have. Look, it's a beautiful picture. And if you like, I'll see if I can sell it for you. But, Henry...
Well?
Please don't bother about the money, Sly. We'll have heaps. And I won't have you bothering.
Well, then what are you crying for?
Henry, it's only because it's so nice of you to try and earn money like that. And I'm not crying.
A lull follows in the affairs of the household. For a full week, Priam paints and Alice is tactful. All changes, however, one bright winter morning when, just as he is finishing his last slice of toast, she returns from her morning
Henry,
shopping.
You'll never guess what happened.
Knowing you, my dear, I'm sure I never shall.
Well, I was passing Mr. Aylmer's this morning, just as he was dressing his window, and then the thought struck me. He might put your picture in it, as a centerpiece, like. So I ran in and asked him, and he said he would, if only he could see it right at once. So I came back and got it, and he found a frame to fit it and gave me a ticket, and that was that. Oh, you must go and look. It looks grand there. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not sold by now.
What did Aylmer say about it?
Nothing much. But then you can't expect a tobacconist to know about art.
No, but why did he display it then?
I don't know, I'm sure. Somehow it just seemed to take his fancy.
In fact, the power of love had put that picture in the window. For had it not been for Aylmer's bedridden wife, Alice's latter name might have been Aylmer. However, whatever power put it there, none can be found to take it out. In the world's galleries, it would be the cynosure. But in Putney, no. Putney passes it by. Until that is one Sunday afternoon when it catches the eye of the most eccentric and notorious landlord of the district.
Mr. Albert.
Mr. Aylmer.
Rare to see you down this road.
My legs, alas. Time catches up. But art. Art.
Yes, Mr. Albert.
Mr. Aylmer. You have, I believe, or so I've seen, an original picture in your window now.
A real original, yes, I have.
Entitled, for so I read, Putney Bridge. When its brightest feature is the Elk Hotel. It should be called the Elk Hotel. Though its frame be vulgar, I wish to buy. How much?
5 guineas, Mr. Albert.
And with a gilt frame, 4 inches thick.
And
a new title plate at the Elk Hotel.
Six.
Six, then. No, 6.5. And not a penny.
Henry, It's been sold.
Hmm?
Your painting. Of course, I always did think it was beautiful. But guess what it fetched?
I can't imagine.
5 guineas. Mr. Aylmer didn't want it, but I insisted he kept the odd shillings. Look, £5. 5 solid pounds.
When asked, however, by his customers how much the picture in the saloon bar cost, Mr. Albert says vaguely, "Oh, some 20 guineas or so. I've quite forgot." 20 guineas, Putney thinks. He must be mad. And soon all Putney is proved right by a doctor's order to have Mr. Alfred B. Albert consigned to a lunatic asylum. 2 years pass. Winter in Werter Road. Roaring fires, cosy teas, and the dogs of fate all fast asleep. But then one day they awake with a vengeance.
Heavens! I wonder who that could be. Whoever it is needn't knock like that. Yes?
Is this Mr. Henry Leakes?
It is.
Well, I'm his wife, and these my sons. Henry.
Good day.
Matthew.
Mom.
And John.
Yeah.
My oldest. And we're all coming to get justice done. Excuse me?
Lord.
Yes. You may well say Lord, but we were determined to get in, and in we are. John, shut the door.
Yeah.
Where is Mr. Henry Leake?
In the sitting room. Just here. Do come in.
Oh, Henry. At last. After 30 years.
I think we'd better all sit down.
No, thank you, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Mom?
Oh, to think of it.
Now, Mother.
Mother, please.
30 years.
Mother, please.
The misery.
Mother, no.
Oh, and look at him. Just sitting there like nothing ever happened.
Well, what did?
You know what did.
I don't, I'm sure.
Ma'am, I'm sorry to have to say this. Believe me, I am. But you are living with a bigamist.
Please.
Mother.
Truth will out, and out it's coming. He married me 30 years ago, ma'am, and 4 months after my oldest was born. That's John there. He just walked out of the house and left me. And what should happen but 8 months later but what my twins were born, Henry and Matthew. Henry, I called him after his father, because I thought he was like him. And just to show I bore no ill feeling, and hoped he'd soon come back to us. When all said and done, I thought, he is my husband, for better, for worse, forgive and forget. But not a word did I have from him, not a single word. And I still wouldn't have. But Matthew, you see, is second curate at St. Paul's, and in charge of the Mission Hall. And one day, your milkman happened to mention to Matthew he had a customer of the same name as himself. And you know how one thing leads to another. So, we're here.
I never saw this lady in my life, and I'm absolutely certain I never married her.
Then how do you explain this, sir? A marriage certificate, is it not? At Paddington Register Office...
I know nothing about it.
I suppose you'll not deny, sir, that your name is Henry Leake.
I deny everything.
And I suppose that you, ma'am, will not deny that you and my father are living here together under the name of Mr. and Mrs. Henry Leake.
I think we'd better all have some tea. Oh,
very kind of you, I'm sure.
Now, Mother.
Don't give way.
Oh, don't you remember, Henry? How you said you wouldn't be married in a church? Not for anybody. But it's strange, isn't it, how 2 of your sons should have gone into the church. And all thanks to Johnny there. They might have been clerks to this day if it hadn't been for Johnny. It's that engineering, you see. And now Matthew's second curate at St. Paul's and getting £50 a year. And Henry will have a curacy next month at Bermondsey. It's been promised. And it's all thanks to Johnny there, bless him.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You may well shrug your shoulders, but you can't shrug us out of existence. Here we are, and you can't get over us. You are a bigamist, sir. A deceiver of women. Heaven knows...
Tea?
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
And for you, sir.
Thank you. Of course, I need not say, madam, that you have all our sympathies.
The discovery is just as great a blow to us as it is to you. We have suffered. My mother has suffered, and now I fear it is your turn to suffer. I hesitate to characterize your situation in plain words, but to put yourself right with society, there is one thing and only one left for you to do. I speak for the family.
Sugar.
And I...
Oh, yes, please.
One lump or two?
Two, please.
Speaking for the family,
I... Would you kindly pass this cup to your mother?
Thank you. Speaking for the family...
Oh, Henry, you are clumsy. Oh, excuse it, ma'am, but he's always been the same. And a clean cloth, too.
Oh, don't mention it, please. My dear, just run into the kitchen and bring me something to wipe this up.
Of course, my love.
He does mean to come back, I suppose.
Who?
Father.
Oh, I shouldn't bank on it. Out he's gone, and so he's gone out. You see, he's rather a peculiar man. The truth is, I don't really think he's quite right in his head. He has the strangest fancies. I never take any notice of them, but they're there all the same. I suppose, Mrs. Leake, that you want to make him go back to you.
Yes.
Well, if you can persuade him to go, if you can make him see his duty, you're welcome. But I'm sorry for you all the same. You see, this is my house and my furniture. For he's got nothing. Nothing at all. Though I know he's not a saving sort of man, but all the same, I pity him. I really do. I pity him. I wouldn't leave him in the lurch. Perhaps your young sons would do something for him. As you know, Mrs. Leakey, he has this way of leaping out so sudden-like.
Yes.
The fact is, he ought to be prosecuted for bigamy.
Decidedly.
That is what ought to be done. Mother.
You're quite right, both of you. But of course he'd deny he was the same Henry Leake. Deny it like anything. No doubt you'd be able to prove it, though. The worst of these law cases is that they're so expensive. Now you're not to worry about me, Mrs. Leake. Of course, I don't know how it would suit you, though. Clergyman, I mean. Having a father in prison. But that's as it may be. And justice is justice. And there's too many men going about these days deceiving simple, trusting women.
Difficult.
Mother.
Difficult. Ruinous.
No.
Indeed, ma'am. You're right.
Mother.
No. I reckon we'd really best clear out.
No.
Oh, yes, Henry. Come, Ned. And thank you, ma'am. You'll hear no more about it.
And as they make their departure, Priam Fowle is wandering the uncharted groves of Wimbledon Common. Oblivious of the blustering weather, he attempts to soliloquize.
Oh, damn, damn. No, I must think. I'm painting again. Good. I found a man who pays twice as much as Aylmer. Good. I have an income. 200 a year. Good, that's good. More happy than I've ever been. Oh, Alice. She's lost her suspicions and all is well. No. No. Oh, Leak. Because of you, what can I do? What can I say? Dear Alice, I know no more about this than you. God of heaven, she won't want to know. She never does. I don't want to know. I understand. That's what she says. Then goes and makes pastry. But this time... Oh, damn, 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 damn.
December rain has a horrid quality. It is capable of conquering the most obstinate of men, and it conquered Priam, forcing him to admit that his tortured soul has but a fleshly garment, and that fleshly garment is soaked to the marrow. And so he goes home, quietly entering his house and like a criminal creeping into his sitting room. 2 weeks later,
Henry, there's a gentleman come to see you.
Hmm?
A gentleman to see you. About pictures. I'll leave you together.
Good morning. I must apologize for breaking in on you, but I have come to see what you have to sell.
Sell? My name is Oxford, of Parfitt's Gallery. My card. I dare say you have heard that now I am the sole proprietor of the place. But at the moment I am acting for a certain collector. This, I presume, is your latest work.
Yes.
Called what? Putney at Night?
Well, that's what it is.
It is excessively distinguished. Those horses, for instance, like equestrian statues. And the variety of light in it. Experimental, yet it works as a whole. May I ask how much? 250? No?
The truth is that I should rather like to keep that picture for myself.
But would you take, say, 500?
500?
Yes. Maître.
Well, for 500, I suppose I would, yes.
Then, here is your check. Pay Mr. Henry Leek the sum of 5. And may I carry it away with me?
I expect so.
£100.
There, thank you.
And now, if I am not interrupting your work, may I venture to ask you to come back to town with me? I have a picture or two at Parfitt's that might give you pleasure. And one in particular I would like your verdict on. Besides, we could perhaps talk over future business. So, if you could possibly spare an hour or so.
And shortly afterwards, Mr. Oxford is leading Priam over the thick carpets of Parfitt's famous galleries into its most select saloon. And there hangs a Delacroix, surely the best of its size ever seen. A Raphael, done late, but surely one of his best, a Vermeer that was not in the Rijksmuseum. And then, on a distant wall, to which Mr. Oxford comes last, a landscape of a town in Italy, its title simply Volterra, Dawn. And Priam's soul leaps into life.
Now that, in my humble opinion, is one of the finest fowls in existence.
I'm sure it must be. It's magnificent.
You agree?
I agree.
Well, that is my little collection, and I am very proud to have shown it you, especially the fowl. Now, tell me, maître, what is your true opinion of the ultimate value of fowl's pictures?
I don't know.
Because I have bought a goodish few fowls, and I must say I have sold them well.
And how much would you sell this one for?
Oh, I fancy I could sell it for a couple of thousand.
I should sell it then.
You would? Well, perhaps you are right. It is a question in my mind, though, whether some other painter may not turn up one of these days who would do that sort of thing even better than Fowl did. I mean, I can imagine a really clever man coming along and imitating Fowl so well that only people like yourself, Matt, and perhaps me, could tell the difference.
I don't know what you're saying.
Well, nobody would find out for a long time. You take me? There is a tremendous chance for a man who could seize it. And so that is why I am inclined to take your advice and sell my one remaining fowl.
I don't know that I'd advise you anything, Mr. Oxford. I am not a dealer.
Then you think maybe I overpraise Volterra?
Maybe a little.
You are Priam Fowl, aren't you?
What makes you think that?
I think you are Priam Fowl because I bought that picture from you this morning.
Then you've been playing a game.
Oh, please don't put it like that, cher man. I only wish to feel my ground. I know you are supposed to be in Westminster Abbey, but when I saw that picture of Putney High Street, I knew
I am an expert, and I would stake my reputation on it. You are Priam Farr, aren't you?
Well, if you will have it, I am. And now you know.
Thank you.
But it is a matter that only concerns me.
Precisely. At least it ought to concern only you.
But you must kindly remember that you bought that picture this morning solely as a picture on its merits.
As a masterpiece.
And you have absolutely no authority to attach my name to it.
Oh, but I am quite content with my bargain. I don't want a signature.
Well, that's just as well, then. For I haven't signed my pictures for 20 years.
Pardon me, but every square inch of every one is unmistakably signed for me. But then, there are some people who want more proof than connoisseurship can give. And that is where the trouble is going to be.
Trouble?
Yes. Some time ago, a man, a little dealer, came to me and offered me a picture I instantly recognized as one of yours. I bought it.
Oh, how much, may I ask?
I don't mind giving you the figure. £50.
Indeed? Who was this fellow?
Oh, a little dealer. Nobody. Jew, of course. But I sold it and guaranteed it as a prime father.
The devil you did. Who bought it then?
Whitney C. Witt of New York. And in time I had offers from the same little dealer, some 40 altogether, and guaranteed them all as fathers. I put the whole of Parfitt's reputation on their being yours. And then, one day I heard from Mr. Witt that on the back of the canvas of one of the pictures, the name of the canvas makers and the date had been stamped with a rubber stamp, and that the date was after your supposed burial. And that his London solicitors had made inquiries from the artist's material people here, and these people were prepared to prove that the canvas was made after Priam Farr's funeral. You see the fix.
Yes, yes.
If these pictures aren't by you, I am a swindler, and Parfitt's name will be gone forever. But for both our sakes, cher maître, I think it will be advisable for you to put me in a position to prove that my guarantee to Witt was justified.
Why, for both our sakes?
Because, well, I shall be delighted to pay you, say, 36,000 in acknowledgement of...
I won't accept a penny. And if you'll excuse me, I shall go now. It is late as it is.
There may be action in the courts, and your testimony would be invaluable to me.
I'll have nothing to do with it. Good day.
Once outside, he gradually grows calmer. He cashes his check at the corner bank, and by dint of walking, grows calmer still, enjoying the solace of the crowded streets. The embankment, dusk on the Thames, and lights, lights. Parliament and grand hotels, churches, chimneys, domes and spires, phantom barges, hansoms, trams, London, super Roman town, majestical, imperial.
But what is this? This is new.
Indeed, the building is new. Though scaffolding still surrounds it and two cranes wave gracefully above it, it is already a beautiful creation. A frontage of pillars, great arched windows, and a large winged figure on its topmost tower. Through its hedge of wooden hoardings, Priam enters.
What the devil do you want? What the devil do I want? I've been appreciating this building, and I want to know what the hell it is.
You're drunk.
No, I assure you. Just curious.
Well, it's a new picture gallery, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, built under the will of that there Priam Farr. But see that notice, or can't you read?
Oh, yes, I can read all right. In 4 languages.
Well, in English, that notice says no hands wanted. Sorry, mate.
Yes, thank you. And I'm sorry, too.
And so Priam Farr walks away from his own museum, the result of an hour of anger and champagne. Ah, but he is furious, and privately enjoys the language of fury, until he sees a vacant cab, decides to bring it to a halt, does so, and orders it first to a famous tailor's, and then to wait till he's finished his business there, and then to go to Werter Road, where an hour later, Alice, thank fate, is no less than herself.
Alice, you remember when I first told you I could paint?
Yes.
Well, at first you thought I was daft, didn't you?
No.
Just thought you'd got a bee in your bonnet.
Well, I hadn't, had I?
Seeing the money you've made, I'd say you hadn't. Where we should be without it, I don't know.
And do you remember the time I told you I was really Priam Fowl? You thought I was absolutely mad.
Not mad. Just not quite well.
But I was, my child. I mean, Priam Fowl, I mean. And still am. Now, honestly, I wish I wasn't, but I am. And the deuce of it is that that fellow who came this morning has found it out, and there's going to be trouble. Listen, my dear, let me tell you the whole story once again.
And beginning with that historic night at Selwood Terrace, and ending with his meeting with Mr. Oxford and his visit to the tailors, he convinces her in less than 10 minutes, with the aid, that is, of £500, that he is, in truth, Priam Fowl.
Well, it's a good thing you've ordered those new clothes.
Why?
Because of the trial.
Well, between Oxford and Witt, what's that to do with me?
Well, they make you give evidence.
Oh, no, I've told Oxford that I'll have nothing to do with it.
Suppose they make you, though. I mean, they can, you know. With a sub-something, I forget its name. Then you'll have to go into the witness box.
Me? In the witness box?
Yes. I expect it'll be very provoking indeed. But you'll need a new suit for it. So I'm so glad you ordered one. When are you going to try it on?
The following June, the day before the trial, and the interest of the United Kingdom in the unique case of Witt versus Parfitts has reached the highest possible degree of intensity.
Oh, but Charlie, darling, you know you can tell me. Has he or has he not come in for tomorrow?
Who?
Why, witness Witt.
Yes, it's true.
And is it true that he's half blind?
Apparently, and has been for some time.
So the fact is, he doesn't know what he's been buying. Oh, dear, the poor rich darling. Who wins, do you think?
Don't know.
Come on, Charlie. Who have you backed?
No one. Honestly. If Witt wins, then Parfitt should fold and Oxford go to prison. But with Oxford's connections, who can tell? On the other hand, if Witt loses, the funeral of Fowl will be shown to have been a farce which fooled all England. The England that counts, anyway. So it's all a toss-up, really. Less justice than chance and influence.
Oh, Charlie, you are cynical about it. I think it's going to be exciting. As exciting, well, as a first night.
The theatre in which the emotional drama of Witt versus Parfitts is to be played lacks the usual characteristics of a modern place of entertainment. It is far too high for its width and breadth. It is badly illuminated, and it is completely deprived of ventilation. It has no stage, no footlights. All its seats are of naked wood, except one. This unique seat is occupied by the principal player, who wears a humorous wig and a brilliant and expensive scarlet costume. The judge. In opening the case, Mr. Vaudrey KC gives instant proof of his astounding histrionic powers.
I am almost ashamed to stand up before you and endeavor to rebut a story so plausible, so convincing. I feel that my task is well nigh hopeless. Nevertheless, I must do my best.
And his best he does, and the case seems closed. He wrings from the unhappy Mrs. Leake the statement that indeed the man in court is her husband, and she weeps profusely. Mr. Crepitude examines her.
When you visited the gentleman in question at his house in Werter Road, were you absolutely convinced of his identity?
Well, perhaps not straight away. It's all come over me since. Shouldn't a woman recognize the father of her own children?
She's sure.
Next, Mr. Crepitude questions Duncan Fowl, especially about a certain boyish meeting with Priam.
Tell us what occurred.
Well, we fought.
Oh, you fought? What did you two naughty boys fight about?
About some apples, I think.
And what was the result of this sanguinary encounter?
My cousin loosed one of my teeth.
What did you do to him?
I'm afraid I didn't do much. I remember tearing half his clothes off.
Oh! You are sure that it wasn't he who tore your clothes off?
Yes. I remember now that my cousin had two little moles on his neck below the collar. I seem to remember seeing them. I've just thought of it.
At this, Mr. Kepitude leans over to a solicitor in front of him. The solicitor leans aside to a solicitor's clerk, and the solicitor's clerk whispers to Priam Fowl. Priam Fowl nods. The next day finds him in the box, looking like the perfect trapped criminal.
Your name is Priam Fowl.
It is.
And yet you chose to live under an assumed name. Why?
Why not?
And you also chose to reject a life of wealth and international fame for marriage with a simple woman and to paint your pictures for £10 each?
Yes.
Could you tell the court why?
Why not?
But then it is Mr. Vodrey's turn.
Now, about the encounter with Mr. Duncan Farr. Of course, if you are really Priam Farr, you remember all about that.
Yes.
What age were you?
Oh, I don't know. About nine.
Oh, you were about nine. Now, Mr. Duncan Fowle says that he tore your clothes.
I dare say.
He says he remembers the fact because you had two moles.
Yes?
Have you two moles?
Yes.
Where are they?
On my neck, just below my collar.
Kindly place your hand at the spot. Perhaps then, if I'm not asking too much, you will take off your collar and display these two moles to the court.
No.
You would prefer to do it perhaps in his lordship's room, if his lordship consents.
I won't do it anywhere.
But surely...
I won't do it anywhere, my lord. If my pictures do not prove my identity, then certainly my moles won't.
The witness, gentlemen, has two moles on his neck, exactly described by Mr. Duncan Fowle, but he will not show them.
The next major witness is Alice, looking every inch the widow of a builder in a small way of business.
How did you first meet your present husband, Mrs. Leake?
Mrs. Fowle, if you please.
Well, Mrs. Fowle, then.
I must say, it seems very queer you should be calling me Mrs. Leake when they're paying you to prove I'm Mrs. Fowle, Mr. Excuse me, I forget your name.
If you'll be good enough to reply.
I met my husband outside St. George's Hall by appointment.
But before that, how did you make his acquaintance?
Through a matrimonial agency.
Oh. Has your husband any moles?
Any what?
I submit to your lordship that my learned friend is putting a leading question.
Mr. Vodrey, I am sure that Mr. Crepitude is merely seeking the kind of information you yourself have tried to obtain. It was in response to your request that this lady was not present in court during her husband's or her whatever's evidence. So I do not consider Mr. Crepitude's question a leading one. However, can you not phrase your question differently?
Thank you, my lord. Has your husband any birthmarks on his body?
Oh, moles, you said. You needn't be afraid. Yes, he's got two moles close together on his neck here. Well, that's all I know of.
Thank you. That is all.
Mr. Vodrey.
My lord. You say you first met your husband outside St. George's Hall. How did you recognize him?
By the way he was looking at me.
Is that all? Do you mean that really you approached him?
No, I do not. We approached each other. You see, I sent him my photographs and said in a letter that I'd be wearing red roses in my hat, and he recognized me.
Did he reply to your letter?
Yes.
And in what name was that letter signed?
Henry Leake.
Then, at first, you didn't believe your husband was the real Priam Fowle.
No. You see, he didn't exactly tell me like. He only sort of hinted.
But you didn't believe him. You thought he was lying.
No. No, I just thought it was only a kind of idea he had. You see, my husband isn't like other gentlemen.
I imagine not. Now, about those moles. Have you any idea why your husband refuses to submit his neck to the inspection of the court?
Well, if you hadn't turned me out of the court while he was being examined, perhaps I could have told you. But I can't as it is. So it serves you right.
And thus ends Alice's performance.
It's ridiculous. No, preposterous. Impossible, yes, that's the word.
What's impossible now, Mater dear?
Well, the trial, of course. It's all about moles. Haven't you read?
I'm tired of it.
If he possesses the things, why not expose them? If there's no law to make him, then make a new law.
But laws take at least a year to put through. By then...
He'd be in prison already.
He would? What for?
Bigamy.
However, 2 days later, something stranger than an arrest for bigamy happens to him. In, as it were, the foyer of the theatre. The King's Bench corridor at the courts. Traversing the crowded thoroughfare, he catches sight of Mr. Oxford talking to a woman. But just as he is turning away, the woman turns too, and stepping towards him, holds out her hand. As still as a statue, she stands before him, a dark veil hiding her age.
How do you do, Mr. Farr?
How do you do, Lady Sophia?
How do you do, Mr. Farr?
How do you do?
I suppose you know, Mr. Farr, that I have got to give evidence in this case.
No, I didn't.
Yes. It seems they have scoured all over the continent in vain to find people who know you under your proper name and who could identify you with certainty, and they couldn't find one. Doubtless owing to your peculiar habits of travel.
Really?
I was in India when I first heard of this case. At first, I thought it must be a sort of Tichborne business all over again. Then, knowing you as I did, I thought perhaps it wasn't.
And as Lady Sophia happens to be in London now, she is good enough to give her invaluable evidence on my behalf.
That is scarcely the way to describe it. I am here only because you compel me to be here by subpoena. It is all due to your acquaintanceship with my aunt.
Quite so, quite so. It naturally can't be very agreeable to you to have to submit to cross-examination. Certainly not. And I am the more obliged to you for your kindness, Lady Sophia.
Mr. Oxford, may I speak to Mr. Farr for a minute?
Certainly, Lady Sophia.
Now, Mr. Farr.
Sophia.
Now, Mr. Farr, shall I have to give evidence or not? You know it depends on you.
Please don't worry. I'll attend to things. In less than an hour, all will be well.
Port, sir? Yeah. Port, sir?
Last he's taken his collar off, then.
And he is triumphal. So that 5 guineas that you owe me, Gerald.
Yes.
I'll remind you.
Do.
And what would have happened if he hadn't undone his collar? After all, there's no law to say that he should have. A grave injustice might have been done.
I might be the richer by another 5 guineas.
Well, at least he's not in the abbey.
No, not yet.
Too long, sir.
Yes. Oh, thank you, waiter.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, dear. We're moving. Would you like to go up on top?
To see England go, you mean? No. Would you?
I might be sick if I did. No, I just wondered whether you would.
Why?
You look thoughtful.
I am thoughtful.
You're not regretting coming already, are you? After all, you've been to lots of places you've never been to before. I'm sure Algiers is just like anywhere else.
once you get accustomed to it. Just a place to live in, like.
No, no. No, I'm looking forward to it. In fact, I'm looking forward to everything. No, I was only thinking, I wonder what they'll do with me next time.
Next time? Oh, I see. Well, the same, of course. I wouldn't dare not to. Not after what's happened. And by then, your pictures will be worth twice what they are now.
Do you think so?
I know so.
Well, my love, if I go first, at least you'll get a ticket to go in. To my enchantress, Alice.
To the famous Priam Farm.
In Bedded Alive by Arnold Bennett, dramatized by James Duckett, David King played Priam Fowl and Jane Hilton Alice Challis. The rest of the cast was as follows. Whitney Witt and Mr. Oxford were played by David March, Mrs. Leake by Jane Freeman, Henry Leake by Paul Chapman, Dr. Cashmore and Mr. Crepitude by Anthony Woodruff, Mr. Vaudrey by Simon Carter, and the Judge by Philip Garston Jones. George Woolley played Duncan Fowle. Frank Morey played Henry Leake Jr. and Mr. Dockery. Gabrielle Lay played Miss Coenson and the shop assistant. Ursula O'Leary played Lady Sophia. And Drew Griffiths played Matthew Leake. Other parts were played by the cast, with James Duckett. And my name is John Rowe. The production in Birmingham was by Anthony Cornish.